West Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. A Syrian Kurdish-led force fighting the Islamic State is on the verge of surrounding a wide area north of the IS stronghold of Raqqa. U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces says its fighters are advancing on two fronts north of Raqqa, the de facto capital of IS's self-declared caliphate. The push from Ain Issa and Suluk north of Raqqa has been ongoing for days under the cover of airstrikes by the U.S.-led coalition. For weeks, Iraqi forces backed by U.S. and coalition air power have moved closer to the city of Mosul, the heart of the Islamic State terror group's holdings in Iraq. Even with all the progress, these forces would appear to be no closer to cutting off IS's leader, the elusive cleric Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. U.S. Army Colonel John Dorian is a spokesperson for the Mosul mission.
Take the Baghdadi piece off the table. If we knew where he was, he would be killed at once. So we don't know where he is.
In recent weeks, Iraqi military officials have insisted that the 45-year-old Baghdadi was hiding in tunnels and bunkers in Mosul, directing the defense of the city himself. Taliban fighters in northern Afghanistan heavily damaged the German consulate in Mashar-e-Sharif with suicide bomb attacks and fought their way into the building during an intense gun battle that lasted for hours. NATO troops and Afghan security forces said they were securing the building and preparing to evacuate consulate staff. Only unofficial casualty estimates have been made available so far. The Taliban said their assault was a revenge attack to retaliate for an airstrike earlier this month in neighboring Kunduz. This is VOA News. In U.S. politics, President-elect Donald Trump went to the White House Thursday to meet with President Obama. After their meeting, Mr. Obama met up with reporters.
Well, I just had the opportunity to have an excellent conversation with President-elect Trump. It was wide-ranging. We talked about some of the organizational issues in setting up a White House. We talked about foreign policy. We talked about domestic policy.
Trump said he looks forward to dealing with Mr. Obama.
We discussed a lot of different situations, some wonderful and some difficulties. I very much look forward to dealing with the president in the future, including counsel. He explained some of the difficulties, some of the high-flying assets, and some of the really great things that have been achieved.
White House said the long before the Republican Trump's stunning upset Tuesday over Democrat Hillary Clinton became apparent, President Obama directed officials to make a smooth transition between administrations, a top priority of his last year in office. While in Washington, Trump also met with congressional leaders. Tens of thousands of people from New York to California filled the streets of large U.S. cities for a second day on Thursday to demonstrate their dismay at Donald Trump's election. The demonstrators said the tone of Trump's campaign comments about immigration frightened them, and they accused him of racism, xenophobia, and sexism. Former U.S. Congressman Aaron Schock of the state of Illinois has been charged with profiting from his government job. 35-year-old Schock resigned his seat last year as investors dug into allegations of his questionable spending. Schock is charged in 24-count indictment. Former Venezuelan Soccer Federation President Rafael Esquivel has been found guilty on charges resulting from a massive FIFA corruption scandal. He pleaded guilty to 7 counts of racketeering, money laundering, conspiracies, and wire fraud. Each charge carries a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison. Today is Veterans Day. It's a holiday here in the United States, a public holiday observed annually on November the 11th. Honoring military veterans who served in the United States Armed Forces. It coincides with other holidays, including Armistice Day and Remembrance Day, celebrated in other countries that mark the anniversaries of the end of World War I.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, November 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South African President Jacob Zuma survives another no-confidence vote in Parliament.
The voting summary is as follows. The yes is 126, the no's is 214, abstain is 1, not voted 58. The motion is therefore not agreed to.
Letsheba Senoli is the Deputy Speaker of South Africa's Parliament. There are calls for the Ethiopian government to dialogue with protesters as the movement marks 1 year. There has been renewed fighting in parts of South Sudan, and an opposition leader demands the resignation of Ghana's Electoral Commission chief.
This EC boss has actually destroyed the credibility of the Electoral Commission and the commissioners. Now, if we're going into an election with such a person, do you think we're going to have a peaceful election 7th December? Do you think that other political parties will accept in good faith the results?
Hassan Ayeriga is the twice disqualified presidential candidate of the All People's Congress Party of Ghana. Transition of power is underway in the United States after a bitter election campaign. And some U.S. women see Hillary Clinton's defeat as a blow to feminism. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South African President Jacob Zuma has survived yet another vote of no confidence in Parliament. The main opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, presented the motion, arguing that indications Zuma allowed the powerful Gupta family to choose cabinet members show he is a threat to the country's stability. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
On Thursday, was frank and robust from the start. Opposition parties raised numerous points of order, calling for the vote to be decided through a secret ballot to protect members of the ruling African National Congress Party who might want to vote Zuma out. The Democratic Alliance left no stone unturned in a bid for victory. Musi Maimane is the DA leader.
A vote against this motion is a vote for state capture. It is a vote for corruption. It is a vote for theft. It is a vote for power abuse.
Other opposition parties also kept the pressure on. Chief Whip of the Economic Freedom Fighters, EFF Party, Floyd Tivambu, called on the ANC to dispose of Zuma.
We believe that the liberation movement itself should have found it in its own conscience to act against a Mr. Jacob Zuma who has abdicated his responsibility as a leader of our country and gave it to a family.
The ANC pushed back against the motion, describing it as a waste of time. ANC Member of Parliament Nomvula Mokonyane referred to the motion as opposition parties' desperate attempt to find relevance.
Continuously, the DA and its allies present before this House motions and issues that seek to undermine our commitment to realize radical economic transformation and the creation of a social order that would benefit the majority of our people.
It was then time to put the motion to a vote. And when Deputy Speaker Letsheba Senoli announced the outcome, the ANC had used their majority to keep Zuma afloat.
The voting summary is as follows. The yes is 126, the no's is 214, abstain is 1, not voted 58. The motion is therefore not agreed to.
With 8 motions of no confidence and a string of scandals having failed to force Zuma out of office, opposition parties say they plan to leave the matter to voters in the next national polls, which do not happen until 2019. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Nearly 20 people were killed and at least 10 others injured Wednesday and Thursday in renewed fighting in different locations throughout South Sudan. Both government and the armed opposition, headed by former First Vice President Riek Machar, have accused each other of starting the latest clashes. Michael Atit reports from Juba.
Residents of Yambio's Haikuba residential area say they woke up to the sound of gunshots causing panic across the area. Budwe State Information Minister Joseph Natale Sabun says anti-government forces attack innocent civilians, forcing government forces to intervene.
Yes, what happened this morning, that was around 6 o'clock in the morning, rebels came and attacked a small area called Haikuba, a residential area in the heart of the town. Following that small attack, people started running from place to place.
Minister Sabun says police and government soldiers repulsed the attackers. He says police are now in control of the town, but confirms that some civilians were killed during the attack.
It is the civilians who actually were the casualties. Maybe about 3-4, some injuries and some dead even. And a place called Napere that was also affected, maybe about 2-3 people were killed there. And now our police forces are moving around, collecting the dead. They are taking them to the hospital. The situation has been brought under control, at least for the time being.
Sabun called on Yambio residents to stay calm, adding government security forces are patrolling the town to prevent further attacks. In a separate incident in Yei River State's border town of Kaya, 13 people, including government forces and members of an armed group believed to be loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar, were killed in fighting that broke out yesterday. Yei River State Information Minister Stephen Ladu says government forces act in self-defense.
There is an armed group that came and attacked Kaya. When they started shooting in the morning, the army and the police in Kaya, they have to react on self-defense. And they chased away the attackers. 3 police yesterday were killed, 3 were injured from the government side, then 10 these unknown gunmen were gunned down.
Ladu says the situation in Kaya and other parts of the state is now calm and government forces are in full control of areas of Yei River. Ladu called on armed groups allied to the SPLA-IO to adhere to the peace agreement and assemble in containment sites in the state. Dixon Gatluak, the SPLA-IO's military spokesperson, confirmed there was fighting in Yambio and Kaya between government forces and armed groups allied to the SPLA-IO, but accuses government forces of attacking their position in parts of the former Upper Nile and Unity states.
Starting from yesterday, they attack our defensive position around Kaya, and our balanced forces, managed to shoot them to Kaya.
Gatluak says the IGAD-mediated agreement to resolve conflict in South Sudan has collapsed. SPLA spokesperson Brigadier General Lul Roy Kwang neither denied nor confirmed reports of fighting in the 3 areas, saying he is yet to receive information from the field commanders. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
In Ghana, the twice disqualified presidential candidate from the opposition All People's Congress APC party has called for the immediate resignation of Electoral Commission Chairperson Charlotte Osei. Hassan Ayariga says it is unlikely the upcoming December 7th presidential elections would be transparent and credible. Ayariga was disqualified for the second time for failing to meet requirements after he challenged his first disqualification in court, which then ordered the electoral body to reconsider his nomination documents. Ayariga tells viewers Peter Clotty the Electoral Commission appears to be biased, something he says would undermine the credibility of the December 7th polls.
This EC boss has actually destroyed the credibility of the Electoral Commission and the commissioners. Now, if we're going into an election with such a person, what do you expect? Do you think we're going to have a peaceful election 7th December? Do you think that other political parties will accept in good faith the results? When a woman has demonstrated in several places and occasions that she is not that credible and she cannot be trusted, any decision she makes, and they will send her to court and the court will quash it. So it clearly tells you that the person has a problem of decision making. Clearly, it tells you that the person is not credible enough to make one single decision right. And for that matter, every time she makes decisions, the Supreme Court or the High Court has to come and give ruling against her decision. So if you've taken a position in less than a year and you've been to court more than 15 times, 20 times, and all the 20 times you've been to court, you've lost all those cases, what is the credibility?
Supporters of the Electoral Commission are of the view that this is part of the learning process of Ghana's young democracy, and that anybody who feels aggrieved could go to court and let the court rule to ensure that there's no ambiguity in the run-up to the election. What do you say to that?
You don't put an old dog to learn new tricks. I think that it's not about the learning process. Because Ghana is 22 and more years in democracy. And 22 years cannot be a learning process now. We've gone beyond the learning process. We have had 5 consecutive elections with a different EC board, and it was all peaceful and no problem. Now, giving it to Charlotte Osei, I think, is the worst mistake the President of the Republic has done so far. And for that matter, she must resign immediately. She should come out tomorrow and make a press conference and hand over.
Some people are of the view that you seem to have a personal grudge against the chairperson of the Electoral Commission. What say you?
I don't have any personal grudge with the Electoral Commissioner, even though she's an old sweeper. I do understand. She's not doing things right. We had a commissioner before her. I contested an election before she came as a commissioner. I never had problems with such person. But when you don't do things right, definitely I'm one person who will not take it. I will not take it lightly when you go astray, contrary to what you're supposed to do. As a member of APC and the presidential of APC, I filed my documents properly and accurate.
With all these that you have expressed, it seems the presidential and the legislative and local elections are going to go on as originally scheduled. Are you confident that the Electoral Commission will be able to administer free, fair, transparent and credible elections on December 7th?
I am not confident that the Electoral Commission will deliver a free, fair and a credible election December 27th. I am not confident because what has happened to me is a clear example of what is going to happen to many others. You know, in mathematics, when you make one mistake from the beginning, you will get the wrong answer no matter the kind of formula you're going to use. And she's done the first mistake, and it's going to affect the whole equation. And every other person will suffer that syndrome of hers. The virus in her is going to spread, and that virus will affect many other presidential candidates and parliamentary candidates. You will be coming here. Definitely, you are going to monitor the elections, and you will report what I'm saying, and that we will not have a free, credible, fair, and transparent election. No doubt about that. I am 100% sure it's going to be free, but it's not going to be fair, it's not going to be credible, and it's not going to be transparent. You will see it, and you will report back to Voice of America.
Hassan Ayarigat is the disqualified presidential candidate of the opposition All People's Congress Party of Ghana. He was speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Accra. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Friday, November 11th. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 17 and a half minutes past the hour. It is now 1 year since persistent, sometimes violent, anti-government protests started in Ethiopia's Oromia region. How much closer are the Oromos, Ethiopia's largest ethnic group, to achieving their demands for more political freedom and economic inclusiveness? Martha van der Wolf reports from Brussels, where opposition activists addressed members of the European Parliament this week.
Olympic runner Feyisa Lelisa is the most famous supporter of the protests in his native Ethiopia. Feyisa, the silver medalist in this year's men's marathon in Rio, drew attention when he crossed his wrist at the finish line, a gesture to show solidarity with the protesters. Feyisa, who now fears returning to Ethiopia, addressed members of the European Parliament 1 year after the start of the Oromo protest. Feyisa says it will be disastrous if the current situation continues. He says that because all media is blocked in Ethiopia, he is using his visibility to get worldwide media attention by being a voice for his people. Also at the European Parliament is Berhanu Nega, leader of the anti-government diaspora group Gimbot Sabat. He was sentenced to death in absentia and labeled a terrorist by the Ethiopian government for trying to overthrow the government. Berhanu believes the next 6 months will show which direction Ethiopia is heading. He says international pressure is needed to prevent the current tension from escalating.
My hope is that at least some of the friends of this regime to talk sense that the path to power through violence in Ethiopia is over, that there must be a way to find an alternative, and this alternative to some kind of a soft landing must happen quickly before it is too late.
Demonstrations in the Oromia region started on November 12, 2015, in the town of Ginchi, about 80 kilometers west of Addis Ababa. Students and farmers protested a plan to enlarge the boundaries of the capital city. Protests continued and spread through the country as demands were no longer only about land grabs, but also about ethnic marginalization, political freedom, and economic development. Hundreds of Oromo citizens have died, thousands have been imprisoned, and a six-month state of emergency was declared in Ethiopia last month. Oromo opposition leader Mulatu Gamechu of the Oromo Federal Congress says that despite a cabinet reshuffle, a lasting solution is still far away.
Unless the government comes down to the table and discuss with the opposition parties and the other people who are not happy with the existing government and create a peaceful dialogue, it is impossible to talk about the improvement of peace and all these things.
Professor Jan Abink of the Center of African Studies at Leiden University says the Ethiopian government should not rely solely on the state of emergency to restore order.
Create a space for discussion. I mean, we need really internationally supervised structures of discussion and deliberation. That might be a great step forward also to rebuild trust in the country, because that is something which is now seriously lacking. Trust between the government and the population.
Human rights organization Amnesty International said this week that the current security measures sweep the underlying issues under the carpet and that it is only a matter of time before another round of unrest erupts. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Brussels.
American voters elected Donald Trump as the country's next president. After a long, bitter, and often divisive race for the White House, work has begun on the clean transfer of power, a bedrock principle of American democracy. VOA's Chris Simpkins has more on this story.
Black lives matter! Black lives matter!
The election is over, but in a deeply divided country, Donald Trump's defeat of Hillary Clinton came with an outpouring of raw opinions outside the White House.
The white nationalism that this man, Donald Trump, has inspired within my country?
Trump, I think he's an awesome guy. I think he's the American dream personified.
Washington, D.C., you're fired.
Following a bruising political contest, President-elect Donald Trump sought to pave the way for reuniting the country.
We owe her a major debt of gratitude for her service to our country. I say it is time for us to come together as one united people.
In defeat, Hillary Clinton offered to work with Trump to end partisan divides as part of the transition.
Our constitutional democracy enshrines the peaceful transfer of power. And we don't just respect that, we cherish it.
Now the Obama administration will work together with Trump's transition team to hire government personnel, including selecting a new cabinet to run the country. President Obama offered his cooperation to ensure the peaceful transfer of power.
We are now all rooting for his success in uniting and leading the country. The peaceful transition of power is one of the hallmarks of our democracy. And over the next few months, we are going to show that to the world.
Before the election, Trump had refused to say whether he would accept the results, casting doubt on a smooth transition. Political analyst Norman Eisen with the Brookings Institution in Washington says President-elect Trump needs to deliver unifying messages before he takes office.
The speech that he gave last night was all he can do as a first step to send a sense of continuity, of acceptance, of bipartisanship.
I love this country.
The presidential transition process culminates January 20th with the ceremonial inauguration marking the beginning of the Trump presidency. Chris Simpkins, VOA News, Washington.
Hillary Clinton's defeat has been seen by some as a blow to feminism. Some American mothers are wondering how to explain it to their young daughters. What exactly happened to the attempt to make female history? VOA's Carolyn Presutti brings us the story from New York City.
You could see the anticipation in their eyes on election night. A Clinton win, proof that women are created equal. a belief shared by moms who brought their daughters with them to vote.
It's life-changing. I mean, my girls will always know that a girl can be president, so nobody needs to tell them that they can't do anything.
We can be the president. Yeah!
Hillary Clinton herself gave young girls like them encouragement in her concession speech.
Never doubt that you are valuable and powerful and deserving of every chance and opportunity in the world to pursue and achieve your own dreams.
So what happened? The gender difference is striking. According to Pew Research, men preferred Trump by 12%. CNN shows white women preferred Trump by 10%. David Schultz, a political science professor, spoke to us on Skype.
There's, I think, still a large percentage of our population that won't vote for a woman for president for the United States.
In the early 1900s, Elizabeth Cady Stanton fought for a women's right to vote. Colleen Jenkins is her descendant.
So she would ask, what's the next step?
Some Trump supporters suggest a different female presidential nominee.
No, I want a woman for a president. Yay! But I want her to have integrity.
As Clinton steps out of the picture, other women say they're ready to step in.
You know, we need to become active again in street politics, as I call it.
A century ago, women got the right to vote. Because of this election, they say they'll fight even harder to get the right to be in the White House. Carolyn Presutti, VOA News, New York City.
The World Health Organization has come out with nearly 50 recommendations for pregnant women. Among them is doubling the number of visits with a doctor or midwife. As VOA's Carol Pearson reports, the measures are meant to increase the health of both mothers and their babies and reduce the risk of death.
The World Health Organization has issued new guidance on nutrition, physical problems like morning sickness, and other issues involving pregnancy. In the past 10 years, researchers have found many ways to increase the chances that a baby will be born healthy. In an interview with VOA, Dr. Ian Askew with the World Health Organization said one finding is that when expectant mothers have at least 8 visits with a qualified health worker, both the mothers and their babies have better outcomes.
That particular recommendation we developed from evidence that's come through over the last few years that shows that the more contacts that a woman has with the healthcare system, the less likely for her to have a stillbirth or for there to be complications for newborn births.
By doubling the recommended number of visits from 4 to 8, health issues can be addressed throughout the pregnancy, and risk factors like gestational diabetes and high blood pressure can be treated. Right now, only 64% of women see a health worker even 4 times during their pregnancies. Askew says that's clearly not enough. And he adds the checkups don't have to take place at a clinic. Home visits by a qualified midwife can suffice. With these new guidelines, the health agency hopes to save lives and increase the chances that babies will be healthy at birth. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Nearly 20 South Sudanese were killed and at least 10 others wounded Wednesday and Thursday in renewed fighting in Ye River State's Kaya, Yambio, and in the former Upper Nile State. And that's it for this Friday, November 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good weekend.
Next on Let's Talk, flowers. Do you believe that they are a symbol of beauty? Join host Sunday Shomari and his guests discussing flowers. Let's Talk comes to you on Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll examine Beyond the Storm, treating the powerless and the powerful in Mobutu's Congo Zaire, a book written by Dr. William Close and Dr. Matudila Malonga, a Congolese physician who co-discovered Ebola in 1976, will also discuss the latest developments in the Democratic Republic of Congo on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.